this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, June 7th, 2009, and this is show number 208. This week we have a couple of dumb questions, a website with Mac freeware, a review of one application I found on that very site, a review from Scott from Australia, and a special guest Belgian for Chit Chat Across the Pond. Well, Michael Hayes wrote in with a dumb question that actually folds into the second dumb question, because I didn't know how to answer the first question. Here's what Michael wrote. I was listening to episode 206 about Mac security update 10.5.7, and I've been downloading it over my dial-up connection. It will likely finish on Tuesday or Wednesday. Not for the combined, but just for the partial update. I have an 8GB second-generation iPod Touch where I could, if I needed to clear space to download the combo update over a Wi-Fi connection. I have an AT&T Wi-Fi plan. Is there a way to put a download manager on my iPod Touch? Love for it to be one that has some resume capability in case I can't do it in one session, where I can move the update to my 20-inch iMac running Leopard 10.5.6. Huh. Well, and luckily, he also suggested I run it by BART, and since I couldn't off the top of my head figure out how to download the file to the iPhone in the first place, I sent it off to BART. BART said, I definitely don't think an jailbroken iPod Touch can do this. If it were me, I'd either 1, get a small device like a netbook and go somewhere with Wi-Fi and get the update, or 2, get a friend with good internet to download it, burn it, and give it to me on a CD. Michael wrote back and thanked us for trying, and then pointed out, you know what Best Buy or the Apple stores could save some money by putting these on CD and allowing for the purchase on cost, at least for the updates and downloads. Well, that's kind of an interesting idea, but then again, if you were in an Apple store, they have fast broadband. You could just download it there for free. I wish we could have been a more help for Michael. I hope he's got the update downloaded by now. Well, the second dumb question was actually as a comment on podfeet.com from Chris. Let me read that one to you. Love the show. I had never heard of All Things Digital, and the topics were really interesting, and your recap got me to the D7 website to check out some of the video features. As I was listening to the show, I paused when you said, Google and Firefox cooperate on geolocation, which is a feature coming out in Firefox 3.5, because the back end of that service is from Google, and Firefox will be the first browser to ship with it. I paused because of your use of the word ship. You could have easily used the word release, and it doesn't really matter, but it got me to thinking. Do web browser companies still, or did they ever, ship, as in send you a CD after purchase, their web browsers? With all the downloading we do, updates, etc., I wouldn't think it would make sense to ship slash make a CD of a browser anymore, but does it have application? Maybe a really dumb question for Dumb Question Corner. Actually, I found a Firefox 3 CD for sale at the Mozilla store at store.mozilla.org. Why? Why would you buy a CD of Firefox when you can get the most updated version for free? A keepsake? A memento? To fall back on for older computers? As always, love the show, Chris. Well, I really like how Chris bookended his comment with love the show at the beginning, love the show at the end. That was very well done, Chris. Well, when Chris started down the line of enjoying my use of the word ship for delivering the downloads of Firefox, I wasn't surprised to be teased. Because I still say things like wind down the window, dial the phone, and a classic favorite, carriage return. Not as bad as a friend of mine. She was at the podium in front of a huge audience, and she couldn't find the remote, and she said, where's the clicker? Okay, for those of you under 50 years old who don't get that one, back when the very first remotes came out for televisions, they had a lever that when you pushed it, it made a distinct clicking sound, so we all called it the clicker. Well, I tried to look it up so I could explain how the clicker worked, but evidently it was an ultrasonic device, and they made it click just so you would know that you had clicked it. Anyway, what was this comment about? Oh, yeah. The dumb question Chris asked in the end was, why would they sell a CD of Firefox? Well, I'm sure you guys have figured this out by now. For Michael, stuck on his slow dial-up. How balanced is it that Michael and Chris wrote in on the same week? Now we have a perfect answer. Well, I'm getting pretty irritated with the blogosphere this week. You know, I'm no Microsoft lover, but geez Louise, I'd sure like to see some open-mindedness about the Bing search engine. All I hear is people mocking the name, which, you know, is fair enough, but they do this and then discount the tool without even trying it. Some of my favorite podcasts, Leo, have been dissing this and calling it a renamed live search, and it's nothing of the sort. Now, Bing might not end up lighting the world on fire, and it may not conquer Google. But what if it is good and we should have been paying attention? I'm holding out judgment for a while. Just because it's from Microsoft doesn't mean it's stupid. Come on, Mac bigots, rise above that, would you? All right, let's talk about Bing a little bit more. I've been testing it out a bit here and there, not exhaustive testing, but just starting to get to know it. The first thing I did was add Bing to my search bar in Firefox, and I've been leaving it there for a few days. One of the things I was excited about was cluster search. That's where you do a search, and along with a list of links down the middle, on the left-hand side, they give you spontaneously created categories of information. The downside to the way they did this is it doesn't always give you a cluster search. Some terms do and others don't. If you type in Jack Nicholson, for example, you'll see down the left-hand side the news, movies, biography, quotes, wallpaper, and more. Each of those categories are specific to Jack and were created just right on the spot. But if you type in, say, No Silicast, you don't get any clusters at all. Where you should see the clusters, it only shows you what your previous search terms were, which is kind of confusing because they're right where the cluster should be. So I have a tendency to want to click on them, but that takes me back to the previous thing I clicked on. Don't think they did that quite right. They should keep it lower and leave it blank if they're not going to do it. The thing is, it's particularly odd that they don't do any clusters because across the top, you can see web, images, and videos. And if you click on, for example, images or videos, you get images and videos related to No Silicast. I guess if they don't get enough hits, maybe they can't form the clusters appropriately. The good news is that within images and videos, there are some really cool features. For example, images are shown very simply. You just see the image. But if you hover over one, it sort of jumps out at you and gives you more detail, like the size of the image and the URL. On the left sidebar in images, there are filters to change what images you're viewing, which Google has, but mostly they just pretty much have size, I think. I think it's only size. But on this one, on Bing, they have size, layout, color versus black and white, style, which is photos versus illustrations, and people, which is either just faces, head and shoulders, or other. It's not perfect. For example, choosing just faces showed Honda Bob, Bart, and a few other podcast logos related to mine with faces. None of which were my face, but, you know, that's okay. They were all at least related to No Silicast and were probably mentioned at one time or another. But it also showed an image of a Zoom H4, which, by the way, I don't own, but I did put an image up of one once, and some auto-cleaning tools. Well, that makes sense, but those aren't faces. Black and white worked perfectly, but it did return some very unrelated images, like Matsumoto contracting, along with a picture of Bart in grayscale. Oh well, they're getting there. Videos are really cool. Really, really impressed with this. It brings up an array of thumbnails, and if you hover over them, they play automatically. It's a really easy way to find the one you're looking for. Again, there are filters for that too. You can filter by length, screen size, resolution, and source. Oh, one more thing that's really cool in normal search is when you hover over a search result, you'll notice a vertical line with a dot in the middle of it to the right-hand side of the result. If you hover over that, you get a synopsis of what you'll find on that page. It's a great way to quickly find out which result you want to view and avoid that dreaded back button. I did find something else that was cool, but then turned out not so cool. On the iPhone, they actually recognize the iPhone with Bing. So when you go to Bing, you get m.bing.com, and it looks really, really good on the iPhone. If you go there on the BlackBerry, it looks really cruddy. Doesn't look good at all. So I was kind of like, all right, they've got the iPhone thing going. They're being kind of open-minded here. This is great. But then when I did a search, there came a flip down, and the flip down said location. I thought, well, that's kind of weird, but I did my search term anyway. And it came back and redrew the screen, but the search term I'd used was now in that little flip down for location, and it didn't return any results. So it was kind of like a complete fail. Yeah, that didn't work at all. I was kind of disappointed in that. Anyway, I want you to give Bing a try, and don't dismiss it just because your previous experiences with Microsoft were icky. And I know, they've been really icky, but don't discount it based on that. This might be cool. Debbie T. came across an interesting site called Snap2 Objects. That's SNAP, the number 2, objects. It has a tagline of design tips plus freebies plus inspiration. She was perusing the site and found a post with 24 free Mac design programs. This was pretty cool to start with, but what really blew her away was when she scrolled down to the software iFast Viewer. The image the blogger chose for iFast Viewer was a picture of me with my mother and Lindsay. I looked back at my show notes, and sure enough, I had reviewed iFast Viewer back on show number 91, and I had used that very exact same photo. Well, I wrote to the blogger, whose name is Mao, telling him I was curious just how this could have happened, and he wrote back that he was compiling information for that post, but on the official site, there weren't any images of the application. So he Googled it on images, and there was my picture. He said, "That's why you guys are smiling on my blog." It made me happy, actually. So after that, I want to make sure you go over and check out Mao's blog, Snap to Objects, in particular the post on 24 free Mac design programs. There's a link in the show notes, because he has posted some really cool applications in there. How about a Lego design application? I bet Bart would like that one. Maya is a really expensive computer graphics application, and he's got links to a free personal version. I'm really excited about an application listed there that lets you modify and create cascading style sheets with a GUI interface on the Mac, or Windows, and or Linux. I'm totally downloading that one. That sounds really fun. How about a page layout program that's cross-platform from Linux to Unix to OS X to Windows and even OS 2? I'm getting really excited just reading through the list. I found a multimedia authoring program for editing video. That looks pretty fun, too. Well, I did find an amazing tool on the site called Live Quartz, but I did a review on it for the Mac ReviewCast. But some of you guys get sore at me if you hear me do the same reviews here that I do there, even though I think I'm so entertaining that anyone in their right minds would want to hear me twice. In any case, I figure some of you might like to hear it here first, so if you're a regular listener to the Mac ReviewCast, just fast forward from this point about 12 minutes, maybe 11:45, while the rest of us listen to the Live Quartz review. When Leopard came out, they said that there were these really cool features under the hood, things we wouldn't realize were there, but the developers would take advantage of eventually, and then we'd understand that we had gotten some really cool. I know other things have come to light, but the application I'm going to tell you about today clearly has taken advantage of what's called Quartz Graphics. Now, I wasn't exactly clear on what Quartz Graphics was, so I looked it up in Wikipedia. Here's an excerpt of what I found. Quartz specifically refers to a pair of Mac OS X technologies, each part of the core graphics framework, Quartz 2D and Quartz Compositor. It includes both a 2D renderer and Quartz Graphics and the composition engine that sends instructions to the graphics card. Because of this vertical nature, Quartz is often interchanged synonymously with core graphics. That didn't help. Well, here's another bit. They said, in a more general sense, the term Quartz or Quartz Technologies can refer to almost every part of the Mac OS X graphics model, from the rendering layer down to the compositor. In this use, the term covers Core Image and Core Video as well. Okay, well, I've heard of Core Image and Core Video before, and always in the sense of the wonderful things under the hood that we don't appreciate. I am no closer to actually understanding this than I was before, but the good news is this application I've been teasing you about will show you the effect of these great technologies, even if I don't understand how they work. All right, enough teasing. Well, okay, a little bit more teasing. I want to tell you how I found this application. You see, I went searching for free Mac applications, and I came across a blog called GabeJacobsBlog.com, where he had a list of some of the usual suspects, including one of my all-time favorites, AppDelete, from Reggie Ashworth, but also an application called Live Quartz from Rapsoft.com. That's RHAPSOFT.com. Live Quartz is touted as a free photo retouching app for Leopard. Now, they have the word touch in capital letters. I'm curious why. Anyway, Live Quartz gives you layer compositing and dynamic filters that are non-destructive by layer and take advantage of core image. Well, what does that actually mean to us? Well, it means that you can have an image with separate layers and you can experiment with filters to do traditional photo techniques, you know, like unsharp mask, and not do any permanent changes to your image. You can remove a filter from a layer long afterwards and not have to undo all the steps in between. You know, I think we're kind of getting spoiled now with Wiretap Studio. You can do non-destructive audio editing, and with Live Quartz, you're doing this non-destructive image editing. Will there be no discipline in this world? Back in my day, we had to make sure you were going to do something before you did it, because you couldn't ever undo. In fact, I remember years ago somebody telling me there was going to be an undo someday in CAD applications, and I said that would never happen. Sure, listen to my predictions. You can bank money on that. Well, anyway, let's launch Live Quartz and see how it works. To bring images into Live Quartz, you can open them directly, or you can drag them from your desktop or iPhoto or Aperture right into the layers on the left-hand side. If you open them directly, it opens a whole new window, so the advantage of dragging them in is that you can bring multiple images into one file to combine them into some more interesting images. So now you have a few images in your layers list over on the left side. At the bottom underneath that, you can scale each layer independently with a slider. You can rotate that layer and change the alpha. Alpha is the same thing as transparency. In the video tutorial on their website, the developer brought in an image of the Earth, shrank it down by using the scale, and then put another image under it so the Earth was floating in space. One technique he employed in the demo was to remove the background on the image of the Earth. Lucky for him, his example was the Earth on a solid black background, because that's what it's always on. Well, Live Quartz has a tool called Background Eraser. The way he achieved erasing this background was he clicked on the solid black and started dragging, and it selected all of the black, leaving just the Earth. The longer you drag, the more colors closer to that it actually starts to erase. In the case of black, it did it fairly quickly. He was then able to drag the Earth image around on screen because it was on an independent layer. This looked really cool. I tried the background erase method, and in the three images I tried it with, it kept selecting color from the part I wanted to keep. So, for example, I tried it on a picture of Steve and I over on Catalina, and some of the background color was very close to the color of Steve's jacket, so part of his jacket started to disappear. I didn't see any options for modifying how close the color is to what you're selecting other than this drag method, and that didn't really work, so I wasn't able to actually use this technique. You'd have to have something where the background was very, very distinct from any color in the image, and it's not color touching that part either. So, like, the part of his jacket that erased was nowhere near the part where I was actually doing the erasing. I was able to erase the background using a traditional eraser, though, and then move it around and scale and rotate the layer, which worked just perfectly. On the right-hand side is your filter list. At first, it's empty, but a simple click on the plus sign, and you can see a list of filters available to you. The filters are very familiar if you've been using Photoshop, Photoshop Elements, or the GIMP, any one of those kind of image editors. It has things like, you know, sharpen and stylize and halftones, all those kinds of things. The video demo they have on the website on filters showed off exactly what this Quartz core image stuff is really all about. He added a bump distortion filter to illustrate how cool this really is. Once you add the bump distortion filter, you get a bright blue circle and crosshairs on the screen. You can drag it around and watch your bump, your image distort as though someone were rolling a ball around underneath it, stretching it. It's doing it real time. I mean, it's doing all the calculating. I think it's that engine in there they keep talking about. It's doing the calculation real time instead of you making a change and then saying render and wait for that to happen. On the right-hand side, under the filter, you get some sliders that change the effect, like you can change the radius of the bump, and you can scale it. Radius and bumps, or radius and scale sort of sounded like the same thing, so I played around with them. And actually, the radius is how big around the area of the picture is distorted, while the scale is kind of how it's distorted. If you make that radius real small, it's kind of actually pinches it, and if it's big, it actually makes this big wide bubble effect on the image. I should really get out of the details here because the real magic is that you can just drag this bump all over your image and watch it change real time, like I said. Now remember that this filter is only affecting one layer. You flip over to a different layer and you can add filters to that one independently. Let's say later on you realize the bump distortion is just silly and doesn't give you the effect you want. You can just click the minus button and the effect is completely gone. I thought that was amazing that it can do that. You can create text layers and apply filters to them as well. Just like any other layer, you can drag this and scale the text around real image, or real time, I should say, and you can change the size of the text by just grabbing that scale slider. That's such a fun way to mess with fonts, especially if you're thinking graphically. You're not in a Microsoft Word boring document where you have to say 14 point. You just want it to look right or fit right in the area where you're putting it. So you just drag that little slider. I thought it worked really, really well. At first, I had trouble figuring out how to change the color of text and other attributes. I'd seen the guy do it on video, but I didn't find it by poking around. There was a color button on the bottom right, but no matter how hard I clicked it with my mouse, it just wouldn't do a darn thing. Not quite sure what that was for. I finally broke down and scanned the help file. You know how I hate to do that, but unfortunately the help file's really well written and it was perfect. It showed me that there's a tiny little fonts button on the left side under the layers that says font. From there you can change font size and color. One thing I would have liked to have is some font-specific filters. You know, in Photoshop Elements, you get things like emboss, and that's the kind of thing you would do to text. And that's the kind of filter you really need. Some of the other ones, you know, making it pixelated or whatever, those kinds of things are maybe not as useful. I did play with the other filters, but none of them jumped out at me as being really font-appropriate. I think they could add a few filters in there that would be a little more useful. Live Quartz has a nice duplication tool. It works essentially the same as the clone tool does in the Photoshop suite. So you option click on one spot and then drag the cursor around, and it actually duplicates the pixels of the sample portion relative to it in the new location. I use this feature all the time in Photoshop Elements for things like removing an electrical outlet from a wall or erasing some distracting element in the background of an image. You can also use the lasso tool to select an area, and then if you option drag, it will automatically make a copy of what you cut out and move it to the new location. Live Quartz doesn't have the magic selection tool that Photoshop Elements has, which truly is magic. That tool lets you select things by color so you can get all the wispy little hairs on someone's head, for example, without laboriously selecting all those tiny little regions. Be nice to have a tool like that in Live Quartz. But then again, Live Quartz is free, and Photoshop Elements is, upwards of $100. An interesting feature of Live Quartz is that you can take a picture with your eyesight right from the application. Not sure I'd do that terribly often, but it's kind of cool that they just threw that in. Bottom line is that Live Quartz is a fluid, easy-to-use application that provides fantastic flexibility in image editing with its use of Core Image. The non-destructive editing is really outstanding and frees you up to be a lot more creative. You don't have to think ahead that far. You can just try stuff. Speaking of creativity, I'm sure someone with an actual right brain could make some fantastic images with this, but since that half of my brain is actually completely empty and I only have a left side of my brain, I was able only to make really silly-looking things. For a free application, this is an amazingly stable and beautiful-to-look-at application. I can highly recommend you take a look at Live Quartz from rapsoft.com. Again, that's rapsoft.com. As I said, this is a free application, but they have a donation button on the site, and when you quit the program, they very politely say, you know, it would be really cool if you just threw some money at us. They're so darn polite about it, they do not bug you before you get to play, they just kind of ask you as you leave. I really encourage you to throw them some money if you find it a useful tool. Remember, support your Mac developers. Okay, Mac Review Cast listeners, you can come back in. We're back to the regular program. So, let's see. Let's jump into a review. Scott from Australia sent in a fantastic review for us of a piece of software called Syrinx. Let's listen up.
G'day to all the NoSillaCast listeners. It's Scott here from Sydney, Australia. Today I want to talk about a Twitter client called Syrinx. That's spelled S-Y-R-I-N-X. You can get it from www.mrrsoftware.com. It's free and it works really well on the Mac with VoiceOver. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about it and just tell you all a bit about the Syrinx Twitter client. Basically, there are different Twitter clients for the Mac, including TweetDeck, Nambu, and Tweety. The problem with some of the clients is the fact that they're using Adobe Air, and Adobe Air isn't accessible on the Mac, unfortunately, with some of these programs. We were all using at one point Twitterific. The problem with Twitterific is the fact that there's no easy way of accessing the retweet function, and when we all heard about Syrinx, we all wanted to get onto Syrinx, Syrinx, give it a try. So basically, with Syrinx, there's some cool features such as the retweet function. You can reply. You can get it to check every 3 minutes or whatever you set the time interval to be for new tweets. And it's just a really cool application. Works really well with VoiceOver. The developer's gone to a lot of trouble to make the program accessible, and it's free. So any people who use Macs that are visually impaired and use VoiceOver that want to give this client a go, definitely visit the website mrrsoftware.com and download a copy and try it out. One of the functions that I really like in Syrinx is the fact you can go to the Friends window in the window menu, and you can actually add friends that you want to follow if you know their email address or whatever, sorry, their Twitter username. And when you add them, you're following them straight away. So you don't have to go to the twitter.com website and put in the details and then click follow. It's just a pain that way. Being able to do it through Syrinx itself is so, so cool. And you can also remove friends if you don't want them as well. And that works well. The other feature that I like is the filter facility in preferences. You can go into the preferences window and click on the filter tab, and you can actually filter out certain words or certain users if you don't want to get posts from them for a while, which is a very cool thing sometimes. Basically, with the program, once you've installed it and just put in your Twitter username and password, you get a table with all your tweets in it, very accessible, reads very well. You can also use the bookmark feature. So if you go away for a while and load the program, it'll put you back on the last tweet that you were reading. And the other cool feature is you can pause Syrinx. So it'll still download all your tweets in the background. And then when you unpause and resume, it'll actually let you catch up on what you've missed. So I encourage everybody who wants to try a new Twitter client, sighted or visually impaired people alike, go and get a copy from mrrsoftware.com. Download it. It's only a 2 and a bit meg file. Just copy it to your applications folder and run it. Really, really worthwhile. So thanks for listening to this fine little mini review of Syrinx. And if anybody wants to comment on this client, you may want to go to the blog over at scottrutt.com and sign up for free, and you can post your entries and comments there. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all soon. Thank you very much.
Well, Scott, I really love your reviews from a bunch of different angles. You explain the problem to be solved, and then you explain exactly how the tool you've chosen solves that problem. You go into some detail, but not too much. And I can't help but try out what you suggest, because it's always fun. You even stay under the 5-minute time limit. Well, I've been running Syrinx ever since I heard your review, and I really like it. If nothing else, just not using Tweety to irritate Don McAllister makes me happy. One thing I really like about Syrinx is that you can have it display both the person's real name and their Twitter name. I have a couple of little things I can't figure out, and you're the one person I can't ask about it, is it shows you the tweets you haven't read in blue, but I don't know how to make them stop being blue, so pretty much everything is blue. Even if I click on them, they don't stop being blue, and I bet you're the one person who can't help me solve that. It also does have growl support, but growl support is, I wish I could say, just growl me my at replies or something, because it puts everything up on screen, so my whole screen gets covered with these replies. And if you, I can't figure out how I cause this, but every once in a while, I cause them just to stay up there. I mean, I can even quit the application and the growl stays up there. So I may have to turn off growl, unfortunately. Anyway, thanks so much for sending this, Scott. Anytime you want to do a review of a product, I will play it on the show. Thanks so much. Well, today was Honda Bob's 30th anniversary picnic, and we had a fantastic time. So many great people came out to see Bob and just to get to meet each other. It's funny to, you know, I mean, we know Honda Bob so well, known him for 30 years, and we don't know any of his other customers unless there's somebody we recommended him to. But we met people who'd been with him for just a few months, people who'd been with him for 3 or 4 years, 15 years, 25 years. We actually met a guy named Jerry who'd been with him for 32 years, and we've been with him for 31. So we were not the longest running car owners with him, but but we were pretty darn close. I ended up going around and bothering people during the picnic. I grabbed my Zoom H2 and I shoved it right in their faces and said, "Hey, I need to talk to you," which drove a lot of people crazy, but it was fun. I got about, I don't know, 6 or 7 people to actually do it. So what I'm going to do is for the Honda Bob ads, I'm going to have their testimonials. I don't even have to write any content. So let's hear the first one, which is actually from Honda Bob himself. All right, I am here with the intergalactically famous Honda Bob at his 30th anniversary picnic party. What do you think, Bob?
Enjoying myself.
Are you amazed that it's been 30 years? Does it seem like 30 years?
It doesn't seem like 30 years, but when you're having fun, it doesn't matter.
So you're doing what you love then?
I'm doing what I love.
So you'd be fixing cars whether they paid you or not, so we could stop paying you?
Well,
that would be some dead silence you just noticed there. So we're going to have some interesting people to interview here today, I hope?
Probably so.
I'm guessing that guy Jerry over there has got some stories to tell about you.
I've been working on his car for over 30 years.
So who have you been working on the longest?
I think it's between you and him.
We'll have to do paper, scissors, rocks, figure out exactly when it was.
Yeah.
Well, I've got that one photo dated that's got a date on it that I can prove it.
With me real slim with that red suit?
Yeah, I think I was thin too. That's how it happens. Hey, how come Steve's still thin? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. That's up to you. That's your fault, I guess. You don't feed him enough.
He's running around.
Bad cooking. That's all there is to it. All right. Well, congratulations, Bob. We're really excited for you. Going to have some fun today.
I'm glad you guys are here.
Well, like I said, we had a really fun time with Bob. The one bad thing is that with this Zoom H2 recorder, when I hit record, it's not obvious when it's recording. You have to hit it twice. And I screwed up on Jerry, the one guy who had more years with Honda Bob than us. So maybe that was subliminal. Maybe I just didn't want Jerry to outrank us there. But anyway, we had a great time. Stay tuned for further testimonials. I think, let's see, we have a total of 8. So we've got 7 more to go. And, I guess I should mention, if you want to have Honda Bob come take care of your car in the happiness of your own home, give him a call at 562-531-2321, or you can shoot him an email at hdabob@aol.com. Honda Bob only works in the LA and Orange County area, and Honda Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. And it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond, but it's not with Bart Bouchotz. It is with Nightwise. And you know what? I probably should have had your URL ready to go. Nightnet.be, is that correct?
You can, no. It's www.nightwise.com. That's K-N-I-G-H-T-W-I-S-E.com.
There we go. Okay, start over. It's time for an exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Nightwise from nightwise.com. No, Nightwise, shoot, I blew it again.
No, nightwise.com, that's correct.
All right, I'm going to leave this whole mess in, what the heck. So how are you doing today?
Being the spare Belgian, I'm doing very, very good. It's great to be here once again.
It's good you're there to stand in for Bart when he leaves us high and dry. Yeah. But it's good to have a spare Belgian just on staff there when you need him.
When consistency fails, quality has to step in to fill the gap.
Oh. All right, so we have some fun topics here. Just last week, we were talking to Bart about switching over his grandmother and grandfather to Ubuntu, and we had actually started that discussion with switching your grandmother over to Ubuntu, but I understand there's some updates to that story.
Yep. We've had Mother's Day here in Belgium a few weeks ago, I think in the beginning of June or something. I'm really bad at remembering this. No, beginning of May or something. And for her Mother's Day, we decided to chip in and get her a broadband connection. So the Ubuntu granny has officially hit the net.
Oh, how exciting for her.
Yeah. She is. She was thrilled. We gave her, you know, a little voucher saying like, blah, blah, blah. From now on, you'll be getting your own IP and you'll be getting your internet connection. And she was thrilled.
Fun.
Yeah, she's really happy with it. We hooked her up. She started surfing. We found her one of these portal sites, one of these real nice link pages for older people, which is done by a guy here in Belgium who does a very good job at it, making web content and web pages, especially for the senior citizens.
Oh,
And she started out there, and now she's she immediately wanted to have instant messaging so she could talk to the grandkids. And we're putting on her email account next week, and then it's off to Skype and video chat. And she's doing really well.
Wow, that's crazy. That is so fun. So did she already have a video camera?
No, not yet. We're going to hook her up with a webcam. We had to upgrade her laptop because the old compact laptop that she had was a little bit too light for your daily internet use. And the Dell we hooked her up with didn't have a webcam yet. So we're going to get her a webcam and one of these nice little headsets so she can, you know, voice chat to the grandchildren and her daughter and stuff. And she really loves it.
Oh, that's really going to open up the world for her, isn't it?
It's amazing. I've been chatting with her. I've got my messenger client on at work, and she's online during the day. And I say, like, "Hello, Granny, how are you doing?" And one of her replies was, "I'm watching a baby elephant being born." It was so bizarre, but she was watching a live stream of a baby elephant that was born here in the zoo in Antwerp. And it was a big media event. And to her, it was like amazing to be able to watch that and take a look at that. And she's, you know, surfing newspapers and sites about crochet. And she's really an avid adapter of the whole thing. I'm very, very surprised at the rate and the ferocity she's displaying at doing all this.
Yeah, it really sounds like she's diversifying too, going to the crochet sites and news and all the and chat. And it sounds like, yeah, she's jumping in with both feet.
Yeah, definitely. We've given her the URL to all our Flickr photos, and she went all through all 3,000 of them. it was 4 o'clock in the morning, so I decided to go to bed. And she has this little alarm clock next to her computer, an egg clock, an egg timer.
Right.
And she puts it on 45 minutes. And every 45 minutes, she says, the egg timer rings and I have to get up and get me some coffee because otherwise I'll be sitting down all day and my joints will ache. So,
about it already. She's doing the ergonomic stretch, huh?
Really, really. Wow. She says, I'm really hooked on to this. This is really interesting. There's so much I can see and find out. Yesterday I was there and suddenly she was on Google Maps and she was browsing the entire globe of Europe and found her family who live in Corsica.
Oh my gosh.
And she zoomed in and she said, like, "Look, it's their house," and she found it out all by herself. It's amazing to see how fast it goes.
Oh yeah. She's crazy.
This lady's 82, I mean.
Okay, thank goodness. That was going to be one of my checks when last week I found out Bart's grandmother and grandfather are in their 50s. I about reached over and smacked him, you know. Was it his mom and dad? Maybe it's his mom and dad. That's right. But yeah. He was talking about these poor old people he upgraded, you know. They're younger than me. So that's fantastic. I wish I could get my mom going on it with, you know, she's 88 years old, but she's blind. And so she'd have to get over the hump of figuring all this stuff out and learning to use a screen reader. And I think it's just a little too much.
Yeah. It's a big leap to do. I mean, I thought I was going to have a hard time explaining the concept to her. I have, I've put my aunt and my uncle online. These people are about 60, and the enormous amount of teaching and explaining I had to do and convincing them to get online was so intensive. And I thought, okay, with Granny, I'm going to have the same amount of time. And I was actually clearing a few evenings in my schedule just to sit down with her and you know, get her on her way. But no, this lady acquired an IP and she was flying.
Wow.
So it's really nice. Yeah. Must be the genes.
You know, a friend of mine coined an interesting phrase. You know, they talk a lot about Generation X, Generation Y, the baby boomers, you know, the World War II people, all this kind of stuff. And they talk about it a lot in the context of understanding social media. That's the conversations I'm in frequently, where people say, well, you know, you have to be in your 20s to understand Twitter and this kind of thing. And, you know, if you're old, you're not going to get it. And they're drawing these generalities about people. But a friend of mine coined a phrase. She suggested that there's a thing called Generation N, and that's where you're simply wired that way. And you know, clearly Granny is in that category. If she was pre-wired, and the minute you handed it to her, she jumped in. And your aunt and uncle are not Generation N. You're Generation N. I'm Generation N in my 50s, and yet I know people in their 20s who, you know, wouldn't use Facebook if you held a gun to their head. They wouldn't use chat, and not for security reasons, just because they just think it's stupid and they don't like it and they don't want to be involved.
They say, like, yeah, the young kids, they know everything about computers. If we take a look at the number of ringtones that are bought via SMS, via text messaging, which cost money.
Two bucks a piece?
$2 or something. And this is an entire booming market. If our youngsters were really that smart, well, they would be able to cut a WAV file, put it into, turn it into an MP3 and Bluetooth it over to their cell phone.
Or have to hack a little bit to do it. But
but there is also a large generation of younger people that do not have this, well, N standard included.
Right, right. You know, that was one great joy to me with my kids when they were, you know, younger. They both just acted like this whole computer thing was just stupid. They didn't want anything to do with it. They didn't want to hear me talk about it. They don't find it interesting. But behind my backs, they have turned into the right kind of people. My daughter called me up one day. I think I've told the story on the show before, but she said, "Mom, Kelly has a 1 gigabyte thumb drive, and I've only got a 512. What's up with that? If I'm going to be the geek of the building, I need to have a bigger thumb drive." And I was so happy with that call that I bought her one. And she goes, "I don't need it. You understand that, Mom?" And I said, "Oh, I totally understand."
And then, I just have to have it.
Right. And my son called me at work the other day and said, "You know, Mom, I want to jailbreak my iPhone. What do you think?" And I was just so happy he asked. It just delighted me that that's something he wanted to do. You know, I didn't care if it bricked his iPhone. It didn't matter to me. What mattered to me was he wanted to.
I think we are the N version of the dad that is going to be extremely happy when his daughter is offering to go fishing with him or something. Or
become an engineer like I did.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, we have different interests, and it's always nice to see that the people around you follow along in those. I had the... the enormous pleasure of meeting my wife and meeting her extremely geeky family, because it is thanks to Niana and especially her father that I have become an IT professional. Otherwise, I would just be an educator and would be working in the social sector. There's nothing wrong with that. But when I met up with this kind of N standard Brady Bunch family with a geeky dad, 3 geeky daughters, a Greek, so, you know, this is a generation of people or a culture of people that, you know, program their VCRs without a manual, that are not afraid of technology. Niana's grandfather used to be, somebody who was really into the latest cell phones and stuff. He came up to me last week. I think the man's 84.
Oh, wow.
It's her grandfather on her father's side. And he comes up to me and he's got this flyer in his hand from some cell phones going like, "Hey, what's this Android thing all about? You try to explain that to me." Guy's 84. And
oh, I love it.
It's a cultural thing. I think it's something that runs in your family, that's genetic, that's something that has to do with your peers, that embracing of new technology and working with it.
I think you're right. My mom, again, 88 years old and blind and using a 26-year-old PC running DOS, she said to me the other day, we were out to lunch, and she says, "So this Carbonite backup, offsite backup thing, tell me about that. Is that stuff any good?"
How
would you know about that? How would that happen? You know, you don't live in any world where that conversation would have taken place. But she listens. She pays attention.
I've worked for the educational sector, bringing networks and computers to schools. I had 8 schools that I provided this service for, and I really rolled out an entire project. There was nothing there. There weren't any broadband lines. They practically didn't have a computer, and they had a staff that was very afraid of computers. So I had to roll out that project, advocate the whole thing, and see that project grow. And one of my last days before I quit the project, I was having coffee in the teacher's lounge, and 3 of my teachers behind me, they were really arguing about USB sticks and that they didn't get an IP right away and they wanted to have their email at home. And I thought, I have brought upon not only a technological infrastructure, but a cultural change. And that is the most important thing.
Right, right. Oh, how fun. I love technology. Yeah.
I know. It's great. We are the people whose hearts can swell with joy if their kids embrace it, but also if their parents and the grandparents embrace it. So that's always nice to do. So, I mean, get people into the fold.
You know what I find? One unfortunate half of it, though, is that people today feel like they need to apologize or that they're less of a human if they don't get it. I was I was at a party and I was talking to my friend Len, and he's a construction guy and, clever, intelligent, fun, interesting guy. And he kind of hung his head in shame about not understanding technology. And I asked him, I said, why is that the case? Why do you feel that way? Because I don't feel bad that I can't do construction. I don't feel bad that I don't understand how to wire a house. I don't feel bad that I can't do plumbing. That doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't bother me that I don't know how to garden. I don't know how to paint. None of these things bother me. But if you could paint, garden, wire a house, do plumbing, you feel like less of a person because you can't do what I can do.
I'm so in awe of those people. I support some people with Windows, not all of them. And I tend to pick
I still
and
won't
choose.
Do that.
Yeah, I know. I tend to pick and choose who I support because I've got somebody who can fix up my bathroom. I'll support you.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
I've got a friendly lawyer around the corner. I'll support you. And I have this. I pick and choose with these
you must
people
have
that
skills I don't have.
That actually have skills that I don't have. I just rolled out an entire security system in a laundrette. Is that the correct word?
Sure. Sure.
In a laundrette of a friend of mine. But this guy's really good with his hands, so he's coming here to fix up my bathroom next week. And I am in awe of what he can do. He's good with his hands, and I tell him that. I said, I am so in awe of what you can do with your hands, and you can build something that's actually, real.
Right.
And he is in awe of my skills. He says, you with the computers and stuff. I say, we each have our talents, and the one that you have is equally awesome to me as is the other way around.
So I think what we have to do is just what you're doing there, is we need to make sure that we don't become this elitist group. I think a lot of nerds like to be that, they have some secret power or something, that we need to recognize that we just know something somebody else doesn't know. And so we need to enforce that with people who get that hanging head of shame look in their eyes. It's like, that's crazy. That's just dumb.
If you encounter that, it's always nice to look for something in those people that they can do that you cannot. I've talked to the guy who does who fixes up the inside of my house and stuff, and he comes over and he does something, some drywalling or stuff, and I get to help him, and he teaches me very simple things, how to hammer in a nail and stuff like that, and I teach him on the computer to do things, and we have this symbiotic relationship on which each of us has his own value, his own personal value, and nobody's ashamed for the other guy. It's not good to be an elitist and look down on the people. It's not good to go way down into newbie land and help out everybody until you drop dead of old age. But you kind of have to go in the middle there, go okay, you've got a skill I don't have. I've got a skill you don't have. These are economic times. Let's talk.
Yeah,
and
I don't do enough of that. I need to start talking to the guy who's going to clean my carpets tomorrow. I should find out what he needs in terms of computer stuff. Maybe we strike a deal sometime.
You'd be amazing how well it works. I had when we bought our previous house. I had five workmen or companies working on it, and these five companies were actually clients of mine. So I did their computers. They did my house. Nobody was going to screw anybody over. So
good
they
point.
Know that if we bork this up, our hard drive is going to be toast next week. And we had this mutual trust, and it worked very well.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, hey, I've enjoyed this this whole conversation. Went a different direction than I expected, but I think it was an important discussion. I wanted to hear about you got a Sony ebook reader, and this kind of folded into some travels you did. And I've read your blog posts about it, but I wanted to talk about it because all anybody seems to talk about is the darn Kindle. But you got the Sony ebook reader.
Yeah, when I don't know if you remember the whole rootkit thing of with Sony.
Do
a few
I
years
remember?
Ago.
Spank, spank, yeah. Spank.
I solemnly vowed never ever to purchase a Sony product again, out of principle.
Right, right.
So Niana and I went over to Hull for a little mini cruise, a Hull in the UK, and we were walking around the bookstore there. Actually, we were filling up our shopping bags because that's the only place where we can actually find English written fiction. Around here, it's all in Dutch. Mm-hmm. And we're big fans, you know. I'm a big Star Trek fan, and Niana is a Doctor Who fan. So we came into the UK and went bonkers, going like, oh, books, books, books. And, you know, we just went shopping. And then I saw the Sony PR505 ebook reader. And it got me thinking, going like, wouldn't it be nice to have an ebook reader? That would be nice. I mean, it would be the next logical step in my digital evolution. And look at about the 100 euros I'm spending on Star Trek books right here. I could, in essence, you know, look out for the PDFs. And wouldn't it be cool to read them on one of these readers? So I did some research, and I'm also an early adopter, so I kind of felt obliged to get one. And I did some looking around. Here in Belgium, it's absolutely, not a good idea to buy the Kindle because, A, you can't buy it in Europe, and B, the whole wireless service that you guys have doesn't exist over here. We don't have that.
There's no reason for it at all then.
No, it's just an ebook reader over here. And it was pretty pricey. So yeah. I went looking at the Sony, and I got like, it says Sony, Evil Empire. But, you know, the reviews of it came out very well. And what tipped me over was that it supported an SD card, not one of these Sony proprietary chiclet things.
No way. They actually use a standard memory card?
There is the Sony memory card in there and a standard SD memory card.
Wow, that's a miracle.
Yeah, I thought like, oh my God, they are turning toward the light side of the force. I got to have this.
Or give them positive reinforcement for it, if nothing else, as a community service, right?
Yeah. I went like, okay, because you put in this extra SD slot, that's one more reason for me to buy it. And I got a lot of flack when I was talking about it on Twitter and stuff, going like, well, it's DRM, that it doesn't support the DRM from Amazon. Well, the Amazon DRM doesn't support the Sony thing either. So, and I have, I'm as a matter of principle, I do not buy DRM content, and I will not waver from that statement. So, looking at Amazon DRM or Sony DRM, it didn't bother me. It had to read. Did it read open standards? Yes, it read the doc, RTF, TXT, and PDF, and that was fine by me because I was never ever going to buy anything else.
Now, let me ask, do they charge you to read a PDF?
Nope.
You just buy it. Amazon does. You have to mail it to yourself onto the device or something like that, and it costs you a dime.
You're really kidding me.
No.
Just put it on the stick. There's a software package for the Mac available called Calibra, and it's a real nice converter. It converts formats as well. Just stick in the SD card, put the books on it, put the SD card in the reader, and hop, there you go.
Oh, fantastic. Yep. Now, how do you like the form factor on this?
It's kind of small, but I love it.
Small in a good way or a bad way?
Small in a good way. It's not like a PDA, and it's not like an A4 page. So it's kind of in between. It's kind of like if you take an A4 page or an American letter page and fold it in half.
Okay. That might be a little better form factor.
I personally thought the Kindle was too big for me, and I never, ever got the little keyboard they put on the bottom.
Well, I guess if you're using the web, that's what that would be for.
Yeah, okay. You can also cross the Sahara on a motor, on a little bicycle, but who does that? They just equip these devices to do these awesome things. But, you know, for example, you buy an SUV and there's this gigantic yellow container on it on the back that you can actually use it. So you can use your SUV to haul gigantic tons of rock in the nearby quarry. Very nice. In theory, it's possible, but nobody's going to do it. Nobody's going to surf the web on a... you can also surf the web on your cell phone, not your iPhone, your general, your run-of-the-mill cell phone. Yes, you can, but nobody does it.
Right. Okay. So more about the – so how much does the Sony eBook Reader cost?
It's, of course, not available in Belgium, which is we don't have the Android. We barely had the iPhone. Of course, we don't have the Sony thing. So I went looking around. I looked on Amazon in Germany, where it was about 350 euros. I'm going to do the conversion here for you. 350 euro to dollar.
$400, right?
That's about $490 in Germany.
Oh, wow.
Yep. And then I went to the UK, because the UK is the only country that doesn't have the euro yet. It still hopelessly clings to the pound. Now, the pound has dropped in value. So I paid 270 euros the UK for the same device, which is $387.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
So
I bought
it's still
there.
A lot of money for books, though.
You got to think about this. Now, if I took a look at the amount of books that I can put on there and that I can read on there, and the amount of books or content that you can find on the internet that's for free, the amount of information that you can process on a device like this is so large and so consistent, you will actually have your money back, depending on how much you read, by the end of the year. If you take a look at it, how much is a normal paperback book in the UK and in the US?
You know, here's one of the reasons I don't have an ebook reader. I don't buy any books because people hand them to me. So I imagine $12 ish, something like that.
Okay. Now that might seem like 300-400 books, but you know, you can fit 300-400 books on one SD card and put them in the device. So that device will actually carry 400 books. It can carry even more. So it will carry its value right away. You will have 400 books on the device.
But you're going to spend some portion of that $12 to buy those books in the first place. So you can't really even take the value of the – well, for your example, you can. But in trying to look at a return on investment, I – don't see how you would ever recover it. It's okay that if you're paying for convenience and you know, lightweight and all that sort of thing, portability. But from a payoff standpoint, you're never going to get there.
Oh, I think I did. Now, look, there are sites out there, and you just have to look around a little bit, or you can use BitTorrent. I don't condone it. I don't approve of it. I just say it. If you look around, the enormous amount of content that you will find is amazing. Now, whether this content is copyrighted, you will pirate it and you will win back the money that way, or you look around on the net and you find this amazing amount of books that are for free, which is also going to return on its investment, this, for me, I thought that this ebook reader was going to save me money because I don't have to go to the bookstore anymore.
Yeah, I think you're rationalizing. I'm not buying it.
Let's
go with Gutenberg, for example. There's 80,000 books or something like that in Gutenberg, and that's all free. But I can download that to my iPhone today and read it on what is that software called? Slipped my mind all of a sudden. Stanza.
Yeah.
I can read that today, but I won't.
True.
Because I have this brand new book from a friend of mine that is a hot selling recent book by an author I like.
Okay, but suppose that I'm going to empty a quarry with my SUV discussion.
Yeah, that's true.
In theory, you can, but it's going to take forever. You know, the iPhone might not be the ultimate platform to read those things on. Imagine that you have something in your hand that really feels to the eye, that really looks like you're reading a book. And I must say, the e-paper quality of this device is very, very good. For me, the convenience of I'm an early adopter. I'm going to buy this and I'm going to go for it. I'm going to stick with it because I love new technology. That's true.
Those are all good reasons. I'm not discounting those reasons.
Okay. second of all, if you open up one of these and start reading while you're in line at, the coffee shop or something, you're going to get a question by onlookers. If that onlooker is a boring guy, you just brush him off and answer him in Swedish. If, however, it is an interesting lady, you can elaborate and demonstrate. So it's also a very nice conversation opener. And it reads really nice. It reads like a book. You can carry it with you anywhere. And otherwise, I would, you know, have either I wouldn't have a book with me, or I would have the wrong book with me. And now I just have all my books with me. Plus, there is so much content online. I've got manuals that I downloaded online, converted to PDF. I got websites
that
you can download and convert to PDF automatically using Calibre.
How does that work? Is it just page by page that it does that, or is there some sort of embedded link thing that still works? Or
I think it's a page by page thing, but you can also use, for example, Automator to just download websites and print them to a PDF, so you have some fresh content every day.
So, and then you transfer it via USB?
Yeah, no, just put it on the stick. Put the stick put your SD card in your computer. Put all the content on there, and just whack it right in, or connect it via the USB cable. Of course, you're two ways to sync.
Okay, and then are you finding it lasts a really long time on batteries?
I've did one charge, and I have gotten through the Eugenic Wars, the second book of the Rise and Fall of Khan Noonien Singh, Star Trek fan, of course. And I am now reading. I am now halfway through Dan Brown's Deception Point, and I am two blocks out of four blocks in battery life, so it hardly uses any power.
Fantastic. And I bet if you used it, if you did it via USB to move the content over, it's probably enough to charge it up too.
Yeah, if someone's going to go for it, don't buy the charger. You don't get a charger with it per se. You have to charge it via USB, but you can buy a charger, and the charger is insanely expensive. Hmm. What you do is you go to your Toys R Us. We don't have those over there, but I know what it is. And you just say, give me a PS portable no-name adapter. And it's the same voltage, it's the same connector, it's the same brand, and it costs you, $5 or something?
Oh, wow. And,
yeah,
you
nice
do
hack.
Have to be careful you know what you're doing with that, though, to make sure you get the right voltage and all that.
Yeah, I found out online a guy who tried it out before I tried it myself, but it's the same adapter. So that's,
you say
that's
PS? What does PS mean?
PS3, PS Portable.
Oh, PS3. Oh, okay. I've got a PS3.
Yeah,
or it's PSP, the same adapter. PSP, you mean?
PSP, sorry, PS
there
Portable.
Go. There you go.
Yeah. No, it's a nice device, and there's so much content online. I've been reading through so many PDF magazines. I've been reading through the Full Circle Ubuntu Linux magazine, which comes in PDF every day, every edition.
Oh, nice. Is that like comes in as a podcast, as a PDF attachment?
Yeah, they don't have a rich media feed just yet, but they're going to set that one up so you can just download the PDFs from the website. I've put my own manuals, which I made, the Nightwise DocuCasts, put them on there, so I have them for reference.
Oh, nice.
And if anyone of your followers might be familiar with Scott Sigler, the king of gore, the podcasting writer, his latest novel, what's it called, Contagious, is not only available as a podcast where he actually reads the entire book, it's also available as a PDF. So I put that one on there as well, and I can just read along. So it's nice.
That is cool. I guess there is a lot of interesting content that's maybe not books as well. That sounds like that really is a neat thing.
For me, it's a digital portal to the offline documents of the internet. I can carry around with me quite a lot. I've got an entire library with me. Whether it's something I quickly have to research, or it's just something I'm reading for leisure. It also plays MP3s, so you can hook up a headphone, and it displays pictures in grayscale. Again, dump truck, U-Haul, blah, 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 quarry stuff. So you're not going to watch a lot of pictures on it, but it also does that.
Now, have you listened to the NoCellacast on it yet?
No.
That wasn't the first thing you put on it when you found it had MP3s?
Hold on. No. I use my SUV to drive around town. So for podcasts, I use my iPod. And for books, I use my ebook reader.
Just teasing. Just trying to give you a hard time, you know.
No, and you sound so much better on the iPod. So
see, there you go. Now you're pulling it out.
Yeah, I know.
Well, we had about 28 more things on the agenda, but we've been going on for quite a while, so I think I'm probably going to cut us off. But always a pleasure to have you on here. I like your style and your way of looking at life.
Yeah, you know, just, you know, use the hardware that's made for the hardware for the applications and stuff. And I must say, you know, I'm just a geek, and for me it was the whole Sony was really something like, okay, if I'm going to digitize my life, I'm going to have to try this. And of course, it's expensive. I know that, but I don't know, you really start to have a little bit of a relation with it, like when we leave the house, we get funny lingo because I have to take my book along. Miana has her books. I just have my book. There's just one book. How many books do you have? One. Where is it? Oh, there.
And, you know, Leo Laporte talks about that when he refers to audiobooks. He says, I'm going to go read a book. He says, I don't care how it gets into my head. It's still reading. It counts.
Yeah. It's, the same thing is when I have to talk about the people that I know on the internet, and I have to refer to something that was said on the net. So I always go like in a conversation, I go like, yeah, the folks on the net always say, people look at me all funny, the folks on the net. Well, you know, it's
the generic
just like
interwebs,
that.
Right? The interwebs say.
Yeah, if I would say that in an average Dutch conversation, they would be looking for the nearby asylum to look me up.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking the time to stand in for the other Belgian. Give us a rundown of every place people can find you and what they should be looking for. Because I know you have audio podcasts, you have video stuff going, you got a website, you got a blog, you got all kinds of junk. I mean, good stuff.
Yeah, sure. No, it's fairly easy. www.nightwise.com, KNIGHTWISE.com. And there I have a daily blog, which talks about how I integrate technology into my daily life. And I have a media feed, and that media feed pushes out a podcast, which I do on a regular basis, or try to. It pushes out a KWTV video cast, where I show you how to tune tech into your way of life and give you manuals and instructions. And there's also from time to time a PDF in that feed that is actually a nice manual made with screen steps, might I say, that shows you exactly how to do things. Somebody really pushed screen steps. I can't remember for the life of me who it was, but it was such a convenient way to work with manuals and PDFs. I decided to do a documentary cast as well, so you can get all of that on the feed.
So I got to tell you, now, to the listening audience, I did not put him up to saying that, but I was so delighted when I saw a PDF come into my feed and I pulled it up and there it was as a screen steps tutorial. That was a happy little smiley moment for me.
Yeah, and the DocuCast episodes are actually sponsored by Screen Steps, so I'm not really pushing their products. But for me, you know, I'm lazy. I've got a lot of stuff to do. I have a life. I recently acquired a garden, which is infested by snails. So if I do something on my computer, I want it to be easy and fast and productive, and to make the manuals and turn them into PDFs, well, Screen Steps was the ideal thing to go.
Now, one thing I noticed was when I started doing a lot of Screen Steps tutorials, I stopped doing as much video because it's so much easier to do than video.
Yeah, but I'm an egocentric, camera horny media whore, so I don't mind.
So you're still doing a little bit of both then?
A little bit of three. The podcast is coming up pretty soon. We're now working on the next episode of KWTV, which probably should air on Monday. And I've got some interesting stuff for the next docucast or script casts, which will be coming out soon as well. Stay tuned.
I do want to warn the listeners, though, there's dangers of listening and watching his video screencast, though, because with one of his video screencasts, I learned how to basically make my OLPC never go online ever again.
I must say I am still in deep, deep shame and sorrow because I have until this day not found a way to fix that again, because you've basically worked up the wireless settings of the IP of your wireless settings, and I haven't found a way to rectify that as yet. So caution. It's not that it's... It's well meant, but sometimes it can go wrong. So be careful. Be careful.
Like, and you know, I never do this stuff unless it's something that is, you know, if my OLPC stopped working forever, there would be no downside to that because it's just an experimental test bed for me anyway. And it's all on an SD card. So I can pull the SD card out and I'm right back to where I was without Ubuntu. And I can also follow the instructions and put it back the way it was before I started borking it. So it's all good. It's just fun.
You have nobody to blame but yourself.
And you.
Yeah.
You told me to.
Yeah, I know. Well, you told me about screen steps, so we had to get even.
All right. Well, I really should cut us off here. I really appreciate the time. This was a lot of fun.
It's been a pleasure being here and being the stand-in Belgian. So next week, it'll be back with the crispy Bart Bouchots.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, man, I had such a great time talking to Nightwise. I mean, he's not Bart, but doggone it, he's a darn good stand-in Belgian. I really had fun with him. Now, some of you may be new to the show and might not have understood what Nightwise and I were talking about when we mentioned Screen Steps. This is an amazing program that allows you to take screen snapshots, you annotate them with arrows, boxes, text, and even sequence numbers, then you put in your text instructions next to the images, and in one button click, you can export beautiful documentation to PDF or HTML with the words nicely formatted and little section labels, and it just looks really, really good. If you haven't seen it before, head on over to screensteps.com and just watch their little one-minute video teaser. Then you won't be able to keep yourself from watching their five-minute video. Then you're going to want to download the free 30-day trial, and finally you're going to go ahead and buy it anyway. Now, you could streamline this process and skip all those steps and buy it right away. It's your choice. But when you do buy, be sure to use the NOSILLA coupon code, that's my name spelled backwards, NOSILLA, all capital letters, to get 25% off the purchase price of Screen Steps or Screen Steps Pro. And then get documenting. Well, you know what? Every week I worry that I won't have enough to say, and it seems that every week I'm cutting things out because I'm afraid the show's going to go too long. Anyway, be sure to keep up the great email, send me comments, suggestions, praise, dumb questions, and even your own audio reviews. That is, if you can keep them in the 3 to 5 minute range. I love to hear from you. Send those emails to allison@podfeet.com and be sure to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.